This episode of The North Remembers is brought to you by MinuteWithMary.com. Ladies and gents, those of you who like to wear mascara, I'm going to tell you something. Winter is coming. Winter is maybe gone, but those lashes, they're going to be going to new lengths. They're going to be as long as the longest Valyrian steel sword that you've ever seen.
Long as the longest night, ooh, dare I say?
Oh my gosh, Blake. I'm telling you, the 4D mascara that I have coming out on May 1st is going to blow your minds, but you can get on my pre-order list early. Go to MinuteWithMary.com, scroll down, get yourself on that pre-order list. And if you shoot me a Facebook message letting me know that you are a podcast listener of ours, I've got something extra special for you.
You said we'd meet again.
And here we are, at the end of the world.
You said I'd shut many eyes forever. You were right about that, too.
Brown eyes. Green eyes. And blue eyes. What do we say to the God of Death?
Not today.
Damn right. From Providence, Rhode Island, welcome to The North Remembers. It's a podcast dedicated to the show Game of Thrones on HBO. So sit back and relax because winter's here! Hello, everybody. My name is Mary Larson.
My name is Blake, and oh my goodness gracious.
That's right.
I've nerded out this whole friggin' weekend.
Right?
The amount of nerdness that I've had, oh my God, it's just between Avengers Endgame, this, I've cried, I've laughed, I've sobbed, I've...
You literally have all had hashtag all the feels.
I was worn out. Like, by the time I went to bed last night, I was cooked.
Cooked is a great word for it. You were all sorts of emotion. You were having nightmares. And I wonder how many people had a really difficult time falling asleep after watching that episode. I mean, hearts are pumping. You're worried about who's going to live, who's going to die. And then that ending. I'm just going to say, if you're on our Facebook Live right now, the night is dark and full of spoilers. So if you have not yet seen this episode, turn this off. Come back tomorrow. All right. So, before we jump into this episode of what might be one of our top three, if not top favorite episodes of Game of Thrones, my goodness gracious, we just want to welcome you to subscribe to the podcast. You can find The North Remembers in your favorite podcast app of choice. You can find us on social media by searching Mary and Blake, or you can head to maryandblake.com to see all of our other podcasts and blogs.
Ready to get into the show?
You bet.
Let's do it.
Down the episode details for me, please.
Well, this one was called, as we alluded to earlier in the episode, it's called The Long Night, which, again, I once again feel is apropos for this entire episode. It's one long night. Now, the director was Miguel Sapochnik. Now, that is a name you should absolutely get to know.
That's a name that is worth spelling.
Yes, it is. And you should get to know this guy because he is exceptional. He is exceptional. His earlier credits for Game of Thrones have included The Gift, as well as Hard Home,
okay,
and Battle of the Bastards.
Oh, okay, yeah.
The Winds of Winter.
Yep.
And he also is doing the penultimate episode for this season.
Meaning the series, the penultimate for the series.
Yes, the penultimate for the entire series. So, which, given his history, I think it's fair to say that we're probably going to get another big battle. And we're probably going to get another big battle down at the King's Landing or the Vale.
I hope
that's some kind of area. So that's my guess.
Okay.
In case you also want to know his other credits, if you're interested in what he's done so far, he has done a lot of television, and his work has included shows like Altered Carbon on Netflix, Iron Fist on Netflix, Masters of Sex.
Okay, heard of that one.
True Detective, also Fringe and Revolution, and also Banshee.
Okay.
The writers were David Benioff, and I want to give a shout out to a good friend of the show, Shane Bowman, for correcting me on my pronunciation of David Benioff. I was saying it as though it was David Benioff. And you, as you know, I am a stickler for pronunciation and making sure getting names are right.
You are.
I've heard both pronunciations, so I was like, you know, I'm just going to pick one. So I went with Benioff, but it's actually Benioff. So David Benioff and Dan Weiss, who are the showrunners, they have written, well, a kabillion episodes, like good showrunners ought to do, of Game of Thrones. They've written many, many, many episodes. If you want to look at their library, you can go to imdb.com and look at the library of episodes that they've written.
Right.
However, they are going to be the writers for the remainder of this season.
Good.
So that is
hold on tight, spider monkeys.
I know. So what do you got for your dragon rating,
My
Mavin?
Dragon rating. All right. So on a scale of 1 to 5 dragons, this episode gets the 5+. For sure. 5+ dragons. How about you, babe?
You know, I think also I'm going to go with the 5+.
You're going to join it? Nice. Ooh, and the horses.
And I'm giving this one a horse.
Nice.
I'm giving this one a horse because, you know, for those of you who don't understand the reference, it's I want horses, not ponies. You know, you can give me 3 or 4 like mediocre episodes, but it doesn't have the same value as one really good episode. It's one horse, okay? Horses, not ponies.
Okay.
All right? This is not a pony.
Yes, I agree.
And the reason why I'm giving it a 5+, like I understand that there's some issues that some people have. I think we'll go over those. But for me, this gets a 5+ because it made me feel viscerally in every way.
Nice word.
And not only that, like for those of you who are seriously interested in how shows and movies and
R.I.P. Viserion.
Viserion.
Potato, potato.
For those of you who are seriously interested in how those things are made, this episode is one of those episodes that should just get your rocks off. This,
I don't even like that phrase. Well, I don't even know what it means, but it sounds like boys can do it and girls can't, so I don't like
this,
it.
Well, this should just get your blood pumping, because the craft work here in this episode is it's astonishing.
Agreed.
It's unbelievable, and this episode was just everything and more, and if I may, I loved it 3,000. I loved it 3,000. That's how much I loved it.
Where is my Charmin? Okay, time for the GBGs so that I don't tear up reminiscing about all things. Okay,
all things.
So my good for this episode, my good, my bad, my great. My good was the shots of the Dothraki's light swords going out. Because first and foremost, Melisandre coming up, like, where did you just come from? Why are you coming from the north?
We were wrong, by the way. Well, at least I was. I said that she wasn't coming back for this episode. And when you think about it, it's probably the only time really she should have come back.
Well, and it was just such a weird spot for her to come from. Like, wouldn't she have come from the south? Why did she decide to? Because she wanted an entrance. Let's be real. This is Melisandre we're talking about. So she comes in, lights everybody's swords up, having the Dothraki go out there and having the aerial shot that Jon and Dany get to see. And you're like, this is amazing. And we're going to be able to see because, you know. And then their lights go out one by one. And
yeah.
Oh, the night and the dark returns. Which brings me to my bad. Well, my bad
hold
for this
hold on, time out. If you have a 5+, you can't have a bad.
Well, I'm having a bad.
Oh.
It was too dark. I know it's the Night King.
Oh, don't do that. Please
it was
don't.
Too dark for me. Okay? I saw someone call it the Battle of Squinterfell because everyone was squinting.
Banging my head against the mic.
Listen, they did what they wanted it to be. Obviously, fighting in the dark, fighting at night, you can't even see the amazing, astonishing amount of whites that are coming at you. They're going to come eat your face. But I'm sitting there going, where's Ghost? I can't see. Who is that? Is that Chora? I don't know what's going on.
Let me get my glasses.
It's my astigmatism. Can you turn up the brightness?
Where's the contrast?
I need
put up the contrast
to
100.
Put on the closed captioning. Maybe it'll have Jorah. Oh, you know. So it was a little too dark for me, especially I rewatched it again today. And I will tell you this, for anyone who has to watch this episode in the daytime, bring out the sunglasses because you're not going to be able to see what's going on. Seeing it at dark, like, I want to watch it again tonight in our cave of our studio without any lights. Then I'll probably see what's going on.
That's
but the
idea.
Battle of Squinterfell, it was. All right,
you and I are going to have some words about this, but go on.
I appreciate that it made me feel like I was in the movie The Descent, okay? And then it's all dark and then that little crazy, creepy things are going to come get me, but I couldn't see. And as someone who can't see in general in life, all my friends who have bad eyesight, you're probably sitting there agreeing with me. Blake, now you know what it's like to be blind, okay? It's not fun. Like, for people who have great eyesight, they're probably... Exactly, because you have no idea. You know nothing, Jon Snow.
I have perfect vision.
That's what my life is like all the time. I'm like, what's going on?
Nothing, where are the Dothraki?
Oh, that's McDonald's. Okay.
That's McDonald's.
Right. My grade for this episode. Holy smokes. Holy smokes, if you had told me that the Night King would be dead in the third episode, I would say, shut your mouth.
I know, I totally
agree. Shut
your
mouth.
Totally agree.
My mind is now blown as to, like, I've been joking that, okay, the Night King's going down, he's going to go to King's Landing. Like, I thought that the ultimate battle was, like, the end of this series was going to be humans versus the undead. Mm-hmm. Now the undead are gone. Now we're back to, like, all the other drama that we've dealt with for 7 seasons. Because, of course, they've sprinkled in the beginning, like,
sure,
ooh, the Night King, the Night King. But really, this has been the drama of the humans in Westeros. And now we're back at it. But for the past 2 seasons, we've been worried with Jon Snow about the Night King and all these.
I would say from day one, we've been worried about the Whites and, like, the White Walkers.
But not all the time. I mean, a lot of the time, we were worried about Littlefinger, and we were worried about Cersei. We were nervous about humans.
Yeah,
Last season, they really brought it home where they were like, you should be worried about the dead.
Yes.
And we became worried about the dead. Now the dead are gone. And I'm sitting here saying, there's 3 more episodes left. Just, you know what, guys? Everyone can just stay at Winterfell. Just send Arya. Like, literally be like, Arya, go get some chicken on your way down. Like, she and the Hound, because the Hound has to go down to King's Landing. You can grab some chickens on your way down.
Think I'll have 2 chickens.
Like, if Arya can kill the Night King, she can totes walk around the mountain and kill Cersei. Okay, done. There's the end.
Maybe.
No, I'm sorry. If Arya can get through an entire circle of shoulder-to-shoulder whites and the entire White Walker posse, all right, one of which knew something was going on. He was like, what is this wind? And kill the Night King. Arya can kill Cersei.
But
if Cersei is harder to kill than the Night King, I'm going to be a little pissed. But that's my grade, is that holy smokes, the Night King is dead. Arya did it. And I don't know what's going to happen for the next 3 episodes. So how about you? What's your GBG?
See, now I'm following the rules of the 5+.
That's your 5+ rule.
No,
I can do whatever
I think
I want.
This is a generally accepted rule of the 5+.
So, I think this is my first 5+ ever.
No, you gave. I think you gave the trailer a 5+.
Well, listen, I can do whatever I want because it's Mary and Blake, not Blake and Mary.
That's a valid point. My good... is the shot of the fire in Melisandre's eyes as she lights up the trenches, and how after the praying and all of that was done, and it just kind of bursts into flame and it comes into Melisandre's eyes and everything that represents, how she's always looked into the flames and saw great victories, either for Stannis or for Jon or for whoever. Everything that represents and how that was captured was spectacular. It set the mood. It's that little bit of it's that sense of mysticism that this show has invested in.
Yes.
That has made it special, and I really loved how that worked. Again, because I'm going by the 5+ rules, my great, I actually have a tie.
Okay.
The first one is the score from Ramin Djawadi. Yes, the Night King theme that played at the end of the episode was incredible. And it really was. It added a whole new layer to what was going on in camera, in frame. It was incredible.
Agreed.
But he also does this thing that's similar to what Hans Zimmer does.
Hans Zimmer, slut of Hollywood.
Especially in the Dark Knight soundtrack.
Okay, that's a good one. I mean, he does a great job, but let's just be real. He needs to calm down.
It's like this slowly rising cello. Mm. Like when they go like this, when they bring it back and forth, what's that called? I don't know, striking? I don't know.
Playing?
It's like, but it sounds like...
Oh, so sliding. Okay, okay.
Sliding,
okay.
Yes, okay, sliding. There's this really...
This is just the bow. Okay. So if you just did this, you're just playing, you know, you could just be playing the same
bowing.
Note. But if you're moving this, if you're moving this finger,
so
there
it's
you go.
So it's this cello and sliding and bowing all
go.
The same, and it makes this rising noise.
Mm-hmm. Rising and lowering of the pitch.
Yeah, and it makes such a great tool for tension. Go back into the middle of the battle
scenes. You just get
the
tingles up your spine.
And you can feel it. You can feel it as they're climbing up the walls. You hear that cello and the sliding going up in pitch, and it's phenomenal. Just go back and listen to it. But my main grate is the first 20 minutes or so of just mainly silence, and using the soundscape, the noises, and the things that are around it to set the tone for the entire episode, and that one shot of. The one long shot of Sam and of Tyrion and how they're preparing and they're going back and forth.
The first shot,
yeah,
that was amazing.
Oh my god! It culminates with Melisandre lighting the Arryx.
Like, I've never been in battle, in case you guys can't tell, but I felt like that's so accurate of knowing what it's going to be like the moments before,
right?
The tension, that's just like you were saying, sorry. Yeah. But really having the pacing and having everyone like really in their own minds. The night before there were different celebrations or different moments of reminiscing, but it's like hyper focused.
Right.
They're not even talking to each other.
Right. Do you wanna hear what I'm saying? What I was mentioning, by the way, for the slide? If you wanna
sure.
hear it.
Sure.
So the slide what I'm talking about is something like this. Hold on. This is from the Dark Knight soundtrack.
Oh. Sorry, I thought you were playing the Night King.
No.
Okay.
But this is from the Dark Knight soundtrack, and this is what he plays, Ramin Djawadi writes,
okay.
for the battle.
I'm getting tense.
Okay, sorry. Well, that's the whole point.
I know. It's doing a great job.
So, that's what I mean,
yeah.
that rising tension. So... Again, for that, like, and again, it culminates with Melisandre lighting the Arryx, and then the Dothraki charging out into the darkness, and each of the flames going out one at a time. What a shot!
Goodbye,
what a
Dothraki.
Shot! I mean, good night, and the best, because again, following the rules for the 5+, the best was also a tie. It's Arya in the library and the tension of all that, and doing what The Walking Dead has forgotten. Which is making the zombies scary and really terrible, and you should fear for your life.
It made me remember in middle school when I played Manhunt in our neighborhood,
yes.
and I'd be like hiding under a bush. And I remember thinking as my 13-year-old self, like, I am so scared right now that someone could hear me breathing. And mind you, I'm just playing with my neighbors. And I'd tell myself, Mary, it's just a game. But still, like, you are nervous that your breathing or your heart pounding would be so loud that someone would be able to hear you. And to see Arya be so stealth.
Oh, yeah, it was great.
That little cat-like training.
But also scared, like terrified.
Oh, yeah.
Like, absolutely terrified. And again, that's what The Walking Dead has forgotten. Mm-hmm. They've forgotten to add tension to the things that they're shooting. And that's what they have done here in Game of Thrones. But the really best for me is the hyper-reality of the ending with the Night King. And how he approaches Bran. It's all slow-mo.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that Bran looks at him eventually.
I've got beef with Bran, but continue.
Oh, I just thought that whole way that
I've got to go now.
Where?
where you going, bro?
Where?
I thought the way that he approaches Bran and the way Bran just doesn't look at him. And all of a sudden, he gives them this look of like acknowledgement, but defiance at the same time.
Yeah. He gave him the awkward Bran look.
Yeah. Either like, you're going to push me?
Oh my gosh, speaking of being pushed, he was finally pushed. Bran was pushing him in that first scene. I was like, yay.
Oh man. So that is my best. And that is that. So where do you want to begin with this? Because I know we are already about 20 minutes into this bad boy.
You lead the way, my friend. You've got the doc. You've got the document, and I feel like you are the keeper of the keys. You're the gatekeeper.
Let me start in the beginning.
Okay. I was just going to.
Well, what do you got?
I don't know who's dead and who's alive.
You want to do who's dead and who's alive?
Okay.
Okay. So you want to, let's just do who's dead because that's going to be easier.
The Dothraki.
Immediately guaranteed dead are this. Beric Dondarrion.
Hold on. Dead. The Dothraki died first.
Well, all of the direct. Well, I mean, we don't have to do it.
Subconsciously.
So Beric Dondarrion.
Oh, he's not coming back to life. And the freaking mist, the priestess is right there, but she was like, you're done.
Yeah.
You're done.
He's fulfilled his purpose, which was sacrificing himself to save Arya and make sure that she gets away.
They all were needed for Arya. Right.
The second one is Dolorous Ed. He is dead. Ed is dead. Ain't coming back.
Still a virgin.
Dead. Jorah Mormont.
Oh my gosh. Mm-hmm. Was that the hardest one for you to see? When Daenerys lost it sobbing over him, and then she's hugged by her little dragon.
Not a little dragon.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, that
he
was
spent
a rough
his entire
one.
Life protecting her.
Did you feel like Theon's death it takes away from Jorah?
No. I didn't. Okay. I was really pleased with Theon's death. In a weird way. I'm not happy that he's dead, but I knew he needed to die, and I was pleased with how all of that went down. Theon is a great shot! Man! I was ready for something. I was ready for him to say, what is dead may never die?
And
I'm not gonna die. I hate that phrase, what is dead may never die. It mm-hmm. never has made sense to
what
me.
What is dead may never die? You have to repeat it every
what
time you say
what is dead may never die? Exactly.
What is dead may never die?
buddy, you did just die. So I was ready for him to do some magic of himself, this is how the Iron Irons rule.
Yeah.
But nothing happened.
Well, I mean, I think he showed up well for what he was doing.
He did a great job. He's a great fighter. Okay, so Theon and Jorah.
All right, so Lyanna Mormont.
Oh, the little bear. But before she went, of course, she takes out the giant.
Absolutely. What a great scene that was.
I was a little down that when I took an online quiz, it told me I was House Mormont.
Yep.
Not down anymore.
I'm not sure House Mormont exists anymore. I think they're gone.
So now I'll have to take it again. I thought I was going to be Stark.
Dead. Melisandre. Gone.
Dead.
Goodbye. Walked out into the sunset.
No more perky boobs.
The Night King. Night King is dead. Goodbye.
Yes. Farewell.
Viserion. Gone.
Ice Dragon. Gone.
Ice Dragon is gone. We have some questionables here.
Yeah. Let's talk about these questionables.
All right. Questionables. First.
Where's Ghost?
Ghost. Ghost is questionable.
Ghost
not saying he's dead.
He's running all out with the Dothraki, but Jorah came back and a few other people came back. So I don't know where Ghost is, but we didn't see Ghost die. And if Ghost had died...
If he dies off screen, that would be irresponsible.
Yeah, so Ghost is most likely alive. We just haven't had full out confirmation from this episode. I did hear from somebody that in the trailer, if you really have good eyesight like me. you can see this little white dog. So I'm assuming Ghost is still alive,
but we weren't
confirmed.
Again, if they didn't show his death on screen, it would be irresponsible.
Correct.
I feel like that he's going to be alive.
Gilly and baby Sam, Sammy.
I also feel like there was a shot of them with Varys at the end in the crypts.
Okay.
Feel like.
Yeah, because they would have had to have Gilly and Varys and Sammy, so they're okay.
Yep. Rhaegal, the other dragon.
Oh, the hurt dragon.
The hurt dragon.
That Jon rode.
Yeah, the one that Jon was riding. Again, not dead necessarily, but not confirmed.
Yes.
This is questionable.
He needs a little wing sling. You know? A little wing sling that he can take care of himself as he nurses himself back to health.
So that is that. Those are the deads and questionables.
Oh, okay. So Sam.
Sam's alive. They showed
him. Sam's alive, but he needs some band-aids.
Yeah.
Pretty badly.
But he's unquestionably
alive.
When
John was running off, Sam was being attacked by four whites.
Yeah, but then they showed him crying. He was alive.
No, he's alive. I'm just saying he's going to need some band-aids or else he's going to get an infection. Grey Worm.
Alive. Confirmed alive.
Okay, great. Also is going to need some band-aids. I mean, how many band-aids do these people have? And how are they going to get rid of all these dead bodies? That's a lot of dead bodies. Okay, so that's who's confirmed dead.
Yes.
That's who's confirmed alive. I am shocked at the lack of dead people that
are you
I care
really?
About. In the sheer numbers, 99% of the people died. But everyone that we really love, aside from Jorah, is fine. Aside from some boo-boos.
Yeah, I would agree.
Let's be real. If this was realistic, half of those people would be dead in a couple of days because of blood infections.
Yes.
Let's be real. There's no maesters aside from Sam.
And they don't have penicillin. So.
No. But I was shocked that both Jamie and Brienne lived. I was shocked that Podrick lived. Like, after his schlong song, I was like, all right.
Schlong
song. You're welcome. Makes me want to shout. Ooh, you were closer on key that time.
That's because I'm awesome.
Yeah.
schlong song.
Okay, I'm not surprised that Jon and Dany lived. I'm not surprised that all the Starks lived.
Yeah.
But like Sir Davos, like there were a bunch of people. Like I was prepared to lose half of the people I loved.
Yeah,
last
and
night.
You know, I think there's some merit to that. But it does show you then that they have something to do going forward.
Correct.
That there's purpose for all of them. When we're talking macro, right, for the show itself, there's purpose for them.
Burn them all.
And I feel like there's a lot of things that some people didn't like, and I kind of get it. I kind of get
it. It's not that I didn't like it. I'm saying I was mentally prepared.
Well, no,
I was stocked up on my Charmin.
Yep.
I was ready to have a lot more tears, and instead, I just had a lot of anxiety and a lot of squinting. It was an amazing. It was my favorite. Like,
well, you've mentioned here a couple of things. I think a lot of people have talked about that they did not like about this episode, and I kind of see where they're going with it. First, okay. John and Dany are kind of sidelined throughout this whole episode.
Their plan was not very clear to us.
Well, yeah, and the plan that they did have, you know, they say that it was, you know, like it was messed up because Dany went ahead and just went into battle as soon as she saw all of the Dothraki, you know,
they
get
smoked.
They talked
about in the after show.
Right, yeah, yeah.
That, like, that's what set off this chain of events where things didn't work out right. I don't think it was clear enough to us as viewers to remember the battle plan that everyone had, because after Bran was like, he's going to come for me, we forgot everything that Jon had planned out with his little chess figurines, okay?
Right.
We just were like, whatever. We forgot that Jon and Dany were supposed to wait with their dragons, and they were supposed to stay put. But of course, when Dany saw that the Dothraki were being killed, she went out and tried to save them as best as she could, which and we're thankful for.
She actually made the same exact mistake that Jon made in the Battle of the Bastards. Jon went out and tried to save Rickon. And he got screwed up.
Was that Rickon? Rickon's gonna get you. Did he get anybody?
I don't know. I don't think it was Rickon. Okay. The other thing I see, obviously, that we've talked about here is that it was very dark throughout most of this episode.
Mm-hmm.
But I think my retort to that is that that's by design.
Oh, it's like the Blair Witch Project or the movie The Descent. We're supposed to feel like we are in the dark and lost as the characters.
Absolutely.
Are.
And not only that, the lighting that they do have is monochromatic. So it's either, you know, blue hues or fire reds, or at the end of the episode, you kind of get a mix of both, right? And
I didn't notice any of that, but continue. You're so smart.
But that's by design also,
okay.
Right? Because it is dark. And you can't have too many colors in the dark because there's so many things happening with the battle. Like, you're supposed to have this, you know, quote-unquote fog of war. You're not supposed to really know what's happening.
No.
You're really not supposed to be able to decipher. And when you do show things that you are able to decipher, that's good. But they have to be monochromatic, because if it's not, it'll be too busy. Your eye, the human eye, won't be able to distinguish all of the things that are happening on screen. It's too busy. And I quite liked it. Mm-hmm. I quite liked how monochromatic it was because of the blue hues of the moon and the snow and the fire reds. It was really the meeting of ice and fire,
mm-hmm,
in terms of a visual statement.
Agreed.
That's why I really liked the lighting.
No, I'm down. And then even when things did start to clear up as the dead were closer and we could see them better because of all the fire, thanks Missandei and thank you Daenerys,
mm-hmm,
then they had the storm. Like that storm
on top
coming
of that,
in.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Which creates a further problem for Dany and Jon, because they're not able to navigate and do the things that they're supposed to do.
They were like Rhode Islanders driving on the first snow of November. Where am I going?
Just white knuckling.
Yeah.
Just you know what? They're on the steering wheel using the force. Just like,
just
okay, here
home.
We go.
Where's Duncan?
where's Duncan? By the CVS. The other thing I hear too is that, you know, like you said, a lot of people you thought were going to die didn't.
And I'm happy with that. Listen, if they want to take the Disney approach and have us all live happily ever after, I'm totes down. I love Disney. It's just this is Game of Thrones.
I don't think they're going to do a Disney
ending. And I was ready
ending.
For everybody that I love to die.
Right. And I can see why some people aren't happy with it because they're like, okay, all the people that we really like are still alive. What are we doing? It's a fair
Sansa
statement.
And Tyrion getting back together?
I kind of want to ship them.
I am.
I kind of want to ship
am.
Them.
I already am.
Another thing is the Night King. All of a sudden, the guy's dead and that's it? Like,
I don't know. Like, where are the children of the forest?
Was the whites and the white walkers, were they just red herrings? Like, were they there just for the sake of being there? What's the purpose? It's now all of a sudden he's just gone.
Yeah.
Like, okay, what's next?
Kill Cersei.
I kind of understand that, but I don't agree, but I understand it. And the last one I hear is like the logic of where Arya comes from. Like, she comes out of nowhere, and all of a sudden she just jumps.
What do you mean? The logic of Arya. This has been Arya's. This is why we had to deal with the most boring plot line of the entire Game of Thrones series, aside from hanging out Meereen.
Exactly. That's the point.
Okay? Bravos, a.k.a. Boringos. Right?
Yes.
The girl has no name. Yes, we freaking
know.
We know she has no name. We know that she can fight blind. All
oh
right.
My God, give her eyes back, please.
And now we know. All of that training was well worth it.
It was for that. I bore through season 5 and half of season 6
for that. They were the same. Meereen and Braavos was together, right?
Yeah, it's all a bunch of haze. It's all a haze.
Oh, it's like the fog of the storm.
So those are some of the problems. I don't agree with any of them, but I see where they're coming from. I think what I really want to do here is I want to get into why this is a 5+. And I think the natural part of it for me is to start at the beginning. And the beginning is...
Start at the very beginning. It's a very good place to start. You don't even know what I'm talking about.
Is that from don't even, Mary Poppins?
No.
Where's it from?
The other amazing Julie Andrews music that you haven't watched.
It's all a haze, too. Because you haven't seen it. Mary Poppins and The Sound of Music is basically season 5 and half of season 6 of Aria.
No. Had I known this about you, we may not be here today.
Get out of here.
It might be Mary and Joe. Because Joe at least would watch The Sound of Music.
I've watched The Sound of Music
with
you.
No, you haven't.
Yes, I have.
You've only watched a couple of scenes.
I watched half the movie with you.
You saw when the Nazis came because you were like, this looks cool.
Yeah, I'll watch that.
I was like, you missed all of it. Okay. All the good singing.
So I want to start at the beginning because it's a very good place to start.
Good job.
And the opening. The opening is where it's at for me. And it opens up on Sam's hands, and he's handed the dragon glass. And Sam is absolutely 100% nervous, tense, don't know what to do, I'm terrified. Mm-hmm. And why this is so important is because we, as an audience, are terrified. I mean,
the shakes just like Sam.
I did. My heart was pumping all night. I was up, I was down.
Yeah, he kept going, I'm so nervous. He literally was saying, I'm so nervous. I'm so nervous.
I was. My legs were shaking.
I know.
And I was up, I was down, I was moving, I was getting Oreos, I was drinking beer. Like,
you were having the Game of Thrones Oreos last night?
I was.
I didn't even notice.
That's because
I ate them all.
You
ate them as stealthy as Arya. the fighting equivalent of Arya is Blake's skill set when it comes to Oreo eating.
So I think the important thing here is that, you know, we kind of like to think that we would be able to fight. And as humans, like, we would be able to defend ourselves and we would rise up to the moment.
I would suck.
I would suck too.
I'd be in the crypt.
Yeah, I would absolutely be in the crypt. But the reality is, we're all kind of like that, I think, for the most part. There are the tough ones out there that would fight and do the whole thing. But we are like Sam, and Sam is terrified. And having that shot and that moment to give us, to ease us into this episode, to say, okay, we can identify with this person. He is nervous. We are nervous. It is silent. We are preparing. People are running around. We are in a haze until Lyanna Mormont screams out saying, hey, go get over there. Someone who's in charge.
Get with the program.
I know. So I think that is an excellent way to start. Would you agree?
Oh my gosh, completely. And it's really just setting us up, reminding us places and where people are going to be. I think you're right. It puts us in the correct emotional frame And then it takes literally the glove off of the Game of Thrones hand and smacks us across in face and says, you're all wussies compared to the little bear. Okay, let's just put you all in your place as you sit there crying already, eating your Oreos, saying, I just don't know what's going to happen. You're all more scared than Lyanna Mormont.
Like, hold on, I got my Lannister Oreo. Hold on. Okay.
What else stood out to you in this episode? I love the idea of just saying, what's the most important, like, what's that one thing that you walk out of your family room or the theater, but you walk out of it thinking that was...
I mean, aside from Arya?
Well, whatever you want.
Okay, Arya killing the Night King. That was the whole, like, oh my God, and the Night King's dead, and my mind is still reeling from that. I'm not too surprised that the Crypts were in a safe place.
Mm-hmm.
I think had people not said, the Crypts are the safest place 1.2 million times last episode, I might have been a little thinking that it would be safe, but it wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. The dragon battle is something that definitely I enjoyed and was thinking a great deal about.
What about it? Did you
in the fog, trying to get the ice dragon and all the scripts? I'm really nervous. I'm really nervous for the other dragon.
Mm-hmm.
I'm quite nervous about him. Let's see what else really stuck out in my mind. Even though I'm not too big of a fan of the Crypts, the Tyrion Sansa thing that really has stuck out to me.
I really want to ship them. I know we just said that, but I absolutely want them to be together.
And then the moment that Missandei is like, because Sansa's like, it wouldn't work out for us, Tyrion, because of the Dragon Queen, and then Missandei just like drops the mic, and it's like, oh, you're right, because if the Dragon Queen wasn't here, we'd all be dead, and she just walks away, and mm-hmm. I was like, whoa, Missandei,
good on her, good on her.
How about you?
You know Daenerys is going to hear about that.
Oh, that's like what's happening right now. Missandei's going and she's like, so here's what happened in the Crypts. All these people got eaten by the dead Starks. Rick and Kamen got them. And just so you know, that Sansa girl, don't trust her. Leave her in this castle. Leave her the North with all these dead bodies. That's what I'd say.
Right.
I'm not saying that that's what Missandei's saying, but I agree. This is not going to bode well. We have a lot of human awkwardness about to go down. Bronn's on his way up.
Mm-hmm.
Sansa and Dany are not going to do well. We don't know what's going on with Jon and Dany. We've got the Cersei thing. Bran. Okay. Can we talk about Bran?
Yeah. My question to you is, he warged off somewhere.
Into the crows.
And he warged into the crows. What's he doing?
Bran freaking warred into a dragon. Freaking warred into the ice dragon, Bran. We know you've been practicing. What the heck are you doing? Or warg into ghost to come and eat the Night King's face. What are you doing?
Mm-hmm.
Warg into Wenwen. Like, warg into something that is useful, not a raven. He's like, I've got to go now. And off he goes for a little joyride, a little Peter Pan joyride, flying in the air. And I was like, maybe he's going to fly to King's Landing and go have the crows pick up some wildfire or do something useful. What did Bran do?
Nothing.
He just wanted the GoPro aerial view of the dragon fight. That's what he wanted. He was like, oh, I hear the dragons. Something cool's going on. Theon, you bore me. I've got to go now.
I got it in 4K. I got the new 4K one.
Like, I really wish that that's what I could do when I have to sit through incredibly painful, annoying conversations with people that I'm not too big a fan of. Mm-hmm. Like, if I was listening to Theon, who almost pretended to kill me, and I didn't want to listen to him anymore, I'd be like, I forgive you. I've got to go now. And then have my eyes turn white. Can you imagine how nice it would be at work if you don't want to talk to people?
Oh, trust me.
I've got to go now.
If that happened to me at work, I'd be doing it every day.
But why the ravens? What the heck, Bran? There's a dragon.
Well, I got 3-eyed raven time about
useless,
that.
Bran.
Bran was useless.
Worgen into ravens just to go play.
What really stood out for me was Melisandre.
He could have worked into her.
He could have literally done anything. He could have drinking a Sprite and it would have been more useful.
I've got to go now.
Oh my God. All right, so Melisandre for me.
Much more useful than Bran.
Much more useful, using her magic twice, fulfilling her purpose. What do you think her purpose was in
the
end?
Her purpose was to be that little needle to Arya. To push Arya to go kill the Night King. That was Melisandre's purpose. Melisandre's purpose, yes, it was nice that she set everything on fire, but let's be real, the White Walkers can take care of that by right. sacrificing themselves or just like eating their Dothraki. Her purpose was to give Arya that last bit, because not only did she like remind Arya, like, you can kill a bunch of people, but she said those special words.
Right.
And what do we say to the God of Death?
Right. And this is something that I think this episode and really this season has done really spectacularly so far, which is having all of the callbacks. You know, it's funny because it's all happening at the same time, but like Avengers Endgame, mm-hmm. you know, I'm not giving any spoilers, but it honors all 22 films of the Marvel franchise in a very specific ways. And I feel like this, it's kind of tied to Avengers Endgame now, like forever. It will be.
Okay.
But I feel like this season, especially this episode, is also honoring what has come before in very specific mm-hmm. ways, whether it is the, you know, not today.
Yes.
Or
even to remind us, I mean, all that time that we spent in Braavos, mm-hmm. when she sees Grey Worm and she says Vala Magulis, or however they say it.
Right.
And it just reminds you.
Yep.
Yeah. It reminds you, okay, Red Woman, this priestess, she's got some Braavos stuff going on. So it's like, yep. that lets that in the beginning, it's just her little hello to Grey Worm,
yep.
but it's just planting that seed that she's got this connection that she and Arya both have. And you right. don't realize it. I mean, when she's looking at Arya when she first comes in and yes. Sir Davos is gonna kill her, which yep. I forget why he wants to kill her so badly, aside from like all the other people she's killed that he loved, but you know, they have that moment, but it didn't click with me that just 2 minutes before she laid down, oh, I know Braavos sayings.
Right. And not only that, you know, she's gone and her prophecies about the eyes and the things that she has said about the prince that was promised has come true, for the most part. I mean, the book version of the prince that was promised, which would be Azor Ahai,
yeah, hasn't necessarily
come true.
No, and so I'm confused about
that. But the TV version of the prince that was promised has essentially come true.
In who?
In Arya.
Stop.
Yeah, in Arya, because she is the one who brings out the light. She is the one who ends the darkness.
Isn't there supposed to be like a fire sword or a sword that is somewhere?
That is the book version of Azor Ahai.
Okay.
And the show hasn't necessarily referenced that.
Sam did. Sam talked about Azor Ahai, whatever.
Yes, but not in the same sense that the book is in. So I don't want to go down that rabbit hole unless
I can't wait to get to the Golden Compass guy. What is his name? Like Bob Stevens?
Yeah,
Harry Strickland.
The accountant.
At least I'll be able to say his name. Harry Strickland.
So it's kind of come true with Arya in that she is the one who ends the darkness.
Yes.
So that has come true for her. And also...
How pissed do you think John is?
I know.
He's just laying in the snow. And he's like,
you gotta be effing kidding me.
People will say it from years on, so where were you?
Yeah.
Where were you when the Night King died? And Sansa and Tyrion will be like, we were in the crypts. People were having their faces eaten off.
John's like, I was yelling at a dead dragon.
They were like, and John, the greatest warrior. Just laying in the snow.
And the other things that I've called back to in this episode in particular were the sticking with the pointy end when Sansa asks Arya what to do. And then also another callback here, and it's kind of come full circle, is the fact that Arya uses the dagger to kill the Night King
yes.
that was meant to kill Bran yes. in the first place. So that has all come full circle.
To protect Bran
in this instance. Just some really excellent stuff, some real master craft. And I really also feel like this whole episode has proven mastery in the craft.
I would have liked one thing.
What's that?
I wouldn't call it mastery because I wanted one thing to happen. I wanted Arya to take the face off of a white and that be how she sneaks in.
No, I can't do that.
Why not?
Because a white is dead.
So what?
What does dead mean?
What does dead mean never die? Like, just cut it off, stick it on, and that's how she would have crept in without being noticed.
She's not Hannibal Lecter.
I don't know how they take off the faces.
Actually, you know what? There is video proof that what's his name?
Yeah, took off the face. That's what I'm saying. I thought she was going to take off the girl's face in the library. Thank you very much. Just going to put that in my little fanny pack. Mm-hmm. Okay, and I'm going to trudge on off, slap that mask on,
my fanny pack,
fit in the line of all the whites standing around Theon and Bran, and just kind of wiggle your way up like you do at a concert. You know, and you just kind of do that little shuffle and you hit people's shoulders. Excuse me, and then boom, take off the mask and kill.
Oh, no. You are too much. You're too much.
Faceless, no?
Yeah, no, it's okay. Hey, it's okay. Right. It's fine.
All right.
Well, in the end, like as I was saying, I really feel like this proved to be a mastery in craft.
I agree.
I think in directing, I think
how many months did it take to shoot?
Oh, it took it took like 5 or 6 weeks of just night shooting.
Weeks. Oh my gosh.
Just night shooting. Never mind all the other stuff.
Yeah,
they started prepping a year and a half in advance.
They had to,
just for this episode.
Poor Winterfell. It's been broken, put back together, broken, put back together.
I think what really shows here is that it was a culmination of a lot of great things, mm-hmm. like a lot of great talents. Whether it is the writing, whether it is the directing, whether it is the cinematography, say what you will about it being too dark, at least it was done for a purpose. And it was done because it was an artistic choice. It wasn't like they just screwed it up, you know? I feel like that was the whole point. And what really impresses me here is the writing, because as we've talked about, a lot of people have said, well, you can't have a battle because a battle for an hour and a half would just be boring. And you know what? They're right. But the real question here is why? Why is it boring? Because you get fatigued, right? Could you imagine it just going off and seeing people just run into spears constantly and sword cutting and this and that? Not only would it get, it's visually boring after a while. You get dull to it.
Agreed.
Right? So I don't want we got enough of that in like Braveheart and like Gladiator and all those
things.
But
not only were they able to give us moments to breathe, but they gave us moments to even laugh, which was extraordinary.
Absolutely. And you are making my own point for me.
You're welcome.
This is why we're married.
And not to John or Joe, or
whoever you want. It's the transition of emotional value throughout the whole episode. We go from having something like really tense to really bad to like funny to awful to, you know, and like it's all a bunch of pain and pleasure and happiness and sadness. It's the transition of that story. And what makes it work is the fact that they had the previous episode be what it was. Spending the time having that bottle episode, giving those emotions, investing in those emotions, right? And the writing here to make this episode work has to follow those transitional values of emotion. And you have to deal in contrasting things. You have to deal in contrasting light, literally, light versus dark, and literal dark, or figurative light, like the good, versus the figurative dark, which is the bad, or both feelings of positivity and negativity. And I kind of want to go over this exercise here a little bit. Because you can see it mapped out throughout the whole episode. The episode itself is one giant battle, but it's a bunch of small movies. It's a bunch of small circles within a much larger circle. It's a very simple, yet also complicated thing that's all happening all together. So what I mean is this. We start off with a positive. Melisandre comes. We start off with something that's tense. With getting prepped, with that thing with Sam and Tyrion and everybody, it's silent. But the positive happens here. You know, maybe we can win this thing. Mm-hmm. Melisandre shows up, puts the lights on, and lights everything on fire, lights the Arrakis, and then all of a sudden, a negative happens. The Dothraki die, and the whole plan, thanks to Dany and Jon, goes to crap. Everything falls apart. But then we have a positive. They close the gates. They bring everybody back in.
Yep.
Melisandre lights the trenches. You see that beautiful shot with the eyes. You know what? Maybe we're going to be okay.
And then the whites just stand there.
And they stand like, okay. But then the Night King orders the whites to tamp out the fire and then blows a big hole into the wall. But But then we have a positive here. Lyanna Mormont kills the giant. You feel like we're going to be okay here. She dies, but she takes it out. And it looks like most of the whites are dying. Then we have a negative. John falls off of his dragon, tries to kill the Night King, and the Night King raises all the dead right in front of him.
Everybody, all the Dothraki, all the Unsullied, everyone who's just died is now on the army of the dead side.
And you can see what's happening here.
Can you be raised twice?
I don't know. That's a good question.
Can you be a dead?
I was one that was arguing that you couldn't raise the Starks down in the crypts. I was way wrong on that.
Because... what is dead may never die, man.
What is dead may never die. But what you're seeing here is you're seeing a natural up and down movement in a story here. Mm-hmm. Then we have a positive. Arya gets out of the library alive. A negative. The Night King arrives at the Godswood and kills Theon. Jon is in front of the dragon yelling at him. And all hope. This is when things seem to be at the worst. They are screwed. There's nothing they can do. They're overwhelmed by with all the whites, the ones that the Night King just raised up again. They're overwhelmed. But then we leave on a positive. Arya kills the Night King.
So good!
Which plays into our expectations of having those expectations subverted, because the Night King has survived three separate encounters. This is something also that this episode does excellently. Mm-hmm. The episode makes you think the Night King is unstoppable. And it shows you three separate times where he is unstoppable.
He doesn't burn it all in Dany's fire.
He falls off the dragon, survives, doesn't die with the fire from Dany's dragon. And then he escapes Jon, kills Theon, and then we're left thinking, oh, well, this is bad news.
Bran, you should have warged into something else.
But in the fourth encounter, something to subvert our expectations, because things usually happen in threes, especially in films. It's a natural language. Mm-hmm. Arya kills him with the fourth encounter.
Yes.
Messing with our expectations to begin with that it was going to be Jon who killed the Night King.
Yep.
This is all important story stuff. This is all stuff that is used to make a story within a visual story unto itself. These cues suggest their own stories, whether it be arguments, how the battle begins, explosions of the wall, the hopelessness when the walls are breached, resignation of certain death, or many triumphs like the dragons blowing everyone to bits. Remember when John and Arya just show up and they just...
John and Dany,
thank you, yeah. Or Lyanna Mormont killing the giant. Or the humor and acknowledgement of the respect between Tyrion and Sansa. Mm-hmm. Or the horror of being stuck in the crypts, or the release, this tension release, the things that have been built up, let out, and the release of killing the Night King when things are at their worst. It's a fantastic flow to how the episode is created, because keeping people interested versus invested are different. Like that last episode, it has to be real enough where we can attach ourselves to the characters.
Oh, I was attached.
But also mythic enough for us to say, holy crap.
And to keep us on our toes.
Yeah, like it has to be real world, but mythic enough to use the smoke, the snow, the slow-mo, the fire, to feel like the world is coming to an end, where you can believe in this idea that the Red Lady is lighting trenches. People are atop dragons fighting in front of the moon or a sky, or when a girl comes out of nowhere to turn her enemy into bits of ice. It's it's mastery.
Seriously.
It is absolute mastery.
Seriously.
I just, oh my goodness gracious.
Great balls of ice.
And you know what I like too? I really feel like they kind of took from a lot of great films and great shows and made it their own. Hmm. Like the thing that I got was like, you know, there were three kinds of films in it. It was a suspense film. It was a horror film at the same time. It was a war movie at the same time.
A love story.
And did anyone get shades of Sansa and Tyrion? Did anyone get shades of Star Wars: The Last Jedi in this?
No.
You didn't?
No.
Because I did.
When?
I did.
Okay.
Okay, remember when Kylo Ren is in the big AT-AT and he shoots down on Luke?
Yes.
And Luke survives?
Yes.
Hello, Night King, Dragon, Dracarys?
No.
No, not the same?
No.
Why not?
Because it wasn't really Luke.
Yeah, but it's reminiscent of that.
Whatevs.
And then also, remember when Rey is being strangled and she lets go of her lightsaber, she catches it and she, you know, gets the guy in the stomach? Same thing with Arya.
True.
I don't know.
They watched that move and they were like, oh, you know what? That'd be cool for Arya one
we
day.
We can totally do that.
We can do that. Yeah.
What about the Hound in this episode? What did you feel like about the Hound in this episode?
Well, of course, they keep saying that the Hound has been saved all this time and for a reason. So was his reason to help keep Arya alive so that she could make it to the room with the Red Woman? Or is his bigger reason coming up still? And I feel like it's still coming up. This episode was okay for the Hound, but I don't feel like he made any big move where I was like, oh, this is why he's still alive.
Right. Well, the reason why he's still alive is Clegane Bowl.
Oh, exactly. But you know where Dondarrion and whatever.
Beric Dondarrion.
Yes. He says, like, you've been kept alive for a reason. Or no, it's the other guy. The religious people, when they were building stuff, and he had found the Hound almost dead.
Yes.
And he's like, oh, I don't know why I'm still alive. And the guy says, you know, you're being kept alive for some reason.
Sure.
Whatever the gods are that are keeping you alive, it's for a reason. So I'm still waiting for what that reason is.
I loved that moment when he does come out of his trance in the fire, when Davos says to him, this is death. Like, well, he says to Davos, this is death. How can we beat death? Mm-hmm. And Davos points to Arya.
Yes.
By the way, Davos just like looking at Arya, just kick ass, was awesome. Like, there's the world is coming to an end, and Davos is just staring at Arya, just beat people to hell. But when Davos says, tell that
Davos?
To her. Yeah. When Davos says, tell that to her, when he says you can't beat death, when the Hound says that.
Yes. Oh, I thought it was Dondarrion again. However you say his name. Beric.
Oh, yeah. Maybe it was Beric Dondarrion. Yeah, I think
I
you're right.
It was him.
Yeah, you're right. It was Beric Dondarrion. I apologize.
It's okay. They both have facial hair.
They're both white English dudes with facial hair. I loved that moment.
Agreed.
I thought that was
okay. So we've got this. We've got all these amazing moments from this episode.
Yes.
We figured out who's dead, who might be alive, who definitely is alive, and where do we go from here?
That's a good question. Do you feel like, do you have a letdown now?
Well, once again, I think that the Vale is a fabulous option of real estate to move to. I think they should go there and hang out for a little while. They have fighters in the Vale. They were the ones that even saved. I don't really know where we go from here. Mm-hmm. Everybody's going to have like... You know when you run low on Band-Aids and you have to use the kid ones?
Yes,
and you're like,
absolutely.
Oh, man.
The Anna and Elsa ones.
Yep, and like My Little Ponies. Like, Sam's going to be walking. Are you sure Sam's going to... These people cannot, in the state that they're in, march down to King's Landing right now. They need
they have to
soup,
regroup.
Yeah. Some antibiotics.
Yes.
Okay, some Band-Aids. They need to clean up Winterfell, burn all the bodies. But yeah, I don't know where we go from here, is basically what I'm saying.
I just wonder, like... Because I always felt like the biggest fight of them all was going to be with the Night King, and he's gone. And it happened like that. It happened. Mm-hmm. And now we're left in a world where we kind of have to deal with Cersei and friggin' Euron Greyjoy.
Oh, I forgot about him.
Like, for me, I don't feel as terrified of them as I did the Night King.
Cersei is smarter than the Night King. The Night King's scarier and has a lot more power. But Cersei, she's got like 50 plans. Okay? She's got plan A, B, A through Z.
That's true.
Her. That's 26. It's not 50, but it's okay.
That's true. I don't know. I'm a little worried.
I agree. Next week's episode. So I thought that episode 2 was going to be a weak one just because of the flow and how generally Game of Thrones like takes a little while to get some steam. Knowing that there were only 6 episodes in this season, I thought of all of them, I was going to feel almost meh about probably episode 2. Mm-hmm. It was phenomenal, of course. Last week's episode was phenomenal. So now I'm a little nervous that next week's episode is going to be a traveling episode. Pretty much the equivalent of Harry Potter. And, you know, when he and Hermione just go camping for months and they like figure out what they're going to do, I'm pretty sure that next week that is going to be the equivalent of what happens. That they're just going to like, with their Band-Aids, walk down south and, I don't know.
You're a wizard, Harry.
Go camping and dance.
Go camping and dance awkwardly.
Yes, very awkwardly.
Yeah, I think it's going to be an interesting question for how the narrative goes now. Because like the show... It's something that the show has told us. The Night King, the battle with the Night King is it. And even Bran, we don't have the time for this.
Bran.
Let's not worry about any
What's
of the other
Bran
stuff.
What's Bran thinking about now?
Yeah, I know, other than warging into crows. The show has given us this
Agreed.
Vocabulary. And now the show is telling us something different with three episodes left. So I wonder... You know, like, okay, is this really...
I mean, it's going to be awesome because so many people hate each other that are still alive.
Yeah, and now it brings back all that tension, like, begin with Sansa and Daenerys.
Oh, gosh. What? I'm so excited for 3-hour Raven time. I just thought of another thing.
Okay, good.
Okay,
all right.
Okay, are we almost there?
Yeah, I think that's it. I mean, we're going to have our listener feedback episode as well. So, by the way, if you do want to get into the listener feedback episode, we record it on Wednesdays. And please get it to us by 6 p.m. Eastern time. Make sure you go to maryandblake.com. Just hit the contact button. You'll see a button that says voicemail. And you can record it on your computer or your smartphone device or whatever device that you have.
Yeah.
And it uses that microphone and it's fantastic. So you will be featured on the next listener feedback podcast. Anything else, my darling, about this episode?
No.
Any final thoughts?
No.
This episode blew my doors off.
I agree.
And, you know, I didn't cry as much as I thought I would. I cried when the Night King died and you saw everybody just disappear. Oh. And Jorah. Jorah fulfilling his arc of just being there for Dany. And like when you when Drogon was getting his ass kicked by all of the little whites and he falls and you're thinking, oh my God, Jon's gonna come back and rescue Dany. It's gonna be great. It's gonna be awesome.
No,
it's Jorah. How effing special is that? The man who has loved her, that she cannot love him back in any way the way that he wants, but he is there by her side protecting her. No matter the friggin' cost, it's a perfect ending for him, and the other ending, the real ending of the episode of Melisandre walking out, taking off her thing, and just walking out into the snow and into the sunlight and disappearing in the light, with the Lord of the Light. Mm-hmm. I just, oh man. What a way to end it. What a way to end it. All right. So we have our throne rankings. Are you ready for throne rankings?
Yes.
All right. Let's do it. All right. So I'll start. Give you some time to think about it. Number five for me, Cersei. I still feel like she's got a chance. She's got a little bit of a chance here, but just because she's, like you said, she's too smart. She's too smart to let it go. Number four, Jon. I feel like Jon still has a chance as well.
I mean, it's kind of like the birthright.
Yes, and I find that he has a chance. That's all I'm going to say. Number three, here's one for you that
okay,
I didn't even
drum
write.
Roll.
Jon and Dany.
Oh.
This is kind of the one that I might go full take on that.
Okay.
I may go full take. Number two, Sansa. And I say Sansa, the likelihood of it, because Jon and Dany may both die.
Yeah.
If Jon and Dany live, I'm saying Jon and Dany.
That'd be cool.
Number one for me, no throne whatsoever.
Okay, I'm down.
How about you? What do you got?
Okay. My number five choice, just because I think it'd be amazing, would be Tyrion Lannister. Wouldn't
Ooh,
that be
that
an amazing end to his story arc that he's been like hated all this time and has honestly been one of the best minds for the entire kingdom? How awesome would it be if Tyrion could be in charge?
Yes.
I think great. So that's just me. That's just me saying I want Tyrion on throne. Four, Sansa, if Jon and Dany die.
Yes.
Once again, great choice. I don't think she'd like to be down there. Too many bad things happen down in King's Landing, so I feel like she'd have serious PTSD.
Yep.
But let's be real. There's pretty much nowhere that Sansa can go where she hasn't had PTSD except Dragonstone. So maybe she'll go there because Winterfell's going to smell really bad with all those dying bodies anyway. Okay, 3, no throne.
Yes,
okay. I'll get to why. And 2, Gendry. I'm still on Team Gendry, okay? So on Team Gendry. A, that guy's hot. B, maybe he and Arya could rule together. C, he's also a legitimate heir to the throne if he was Cersei's first baby. I'm still on that train, that Gendry is actually Cersei's baby and that maybe I'll get to that. Okay, and 1 is Dany.
Okay. All right, I wasn't on
the Dany train, but I kind of feel like...
Why are you on the Dany train now?
I'm not on it. Like, I don't actually want her to win right now.
Okay.
I don't really want Dany to win right now.
I feel like the way they're writing her, it ain't going to end well.
Yeah.
I mean, but maybe that's the point. Maybe they want us to think that so that they subvert it and she ends up being an okay choice.
That's... I don't know. Okay, 3-Eyed Raven time. Let's get to the
fun stuff. Ready for 3-Eyed Raven time?
Yes.
All right, let's do it. All right, you're all excited.
Oh my gosh,
I know.
I'm so excited.
You're all excited, so just go ahead.
3-Eyed Ravens.
All right. Well, you have 3 of them?
Bringing it.
Holy smokes.
Well, one of them I mentioned on our listener feedback episode.
Yes.
Which was that Bran is going to figure out the wildfire. He's going to do something useful with his warging instead of just going into dang ravens. Okay, and he's going to warg, hoping to figure out how to work with this wildfire situation. Now, I had thought that he might be trying to get Cersei to use the wildfire to kill off the Night King, but obviously they're all dead. So I still think that somehow Bran is going to be trying to work out burning like troops or something with the wildfire that is in King's Landing, except he's going to be time traveling wrong because Bran's not really good at this 3-Eyed Raven business. And he's instead going to go back in time and he is the one that makes the Mad King go mad. That
yes.
He is the one that is having the Mad King saying burn them all, just like he ruined Hodor. Okay, so that's what I'm thinking is going to happen. That is why I think we're going to get finally this tie, and Jaime's even going to see it. And Jaime's going to be like, oh my gosh, that's why the Mad King kept saying burn them all. It's because of Bran. Okay,
right.
So that's my theory number 1.
Okay.
My theory number 2 is that there is going to be wildfire.
Okay.
And that Jon Snow is going to live through it. Because Jon Snow hasn't walked through fire yet.
Excellent.
And I was like really ready for him to. I was ready for something with fire to happen and that Jon was going to be in. And then we'd be like, naked Jon Snow and he could walk through fire.
Oh, that would be great.
Amazing.
If Cersei has him in a predicament where she thinks she's got him, she uses the wildfire thinking, oh, I did this at the Sept. I can do this to Jon Snow.
Or to John and Danny.
John and Danny, and they both
and they
walk out
naked.
Oh,
they're like, own it, Cersei.
Oh, yes.
Own
yes,
it.
Yes.
And Danny's going to be like, I've got perky boobs. I've had a dress bed.
Yep. Yep.
Like you have. So that's my wildfire with John walking out of it. And then I just had a third one. And I forgot it.
You forgot. All right. Well, I'll take over. You think about it. Okay. Number 1 for me, John, I think, is going to have to kill Danny. I think that's what's going to have to happen because I just feel like...
You just said you signed on to the John and Danny ruling the throne together. And
if,
now you're saying he's going to kill her.
But I also said John would rule if Danny is dead. And I think that John's going to do it. I think he has to.
Man.
I think he has to. Just because the way that she's going, it just doesn't feel right. It doesn't feel right. Like, it would feel so pedestrian to just have her on the throne at the end.
I just don't want her to kill her. That would not be in Jon Snow's
But, like,
character.
I think it's just going to be because she's going to end up having to do something. She's going to have to make a choice that's not going to be good.
About Sansa, most likely.
Maybe that's definitely a possibility.
Peter's gonna hate. She's gonna say that. She's gonna look at Sansa and say, "T Swift taught me. Haters gonna hate. Shake it off. I'm gonna kill you."
Another one that I have here is also: what if when they go to King's Landing, Jaime goes back to Cersei's side because his promise was to fight for the living, and he did it. He fulfilled his promise. And
check.
And what if
my watch is done?
Right. What if he turns sides, but then sees Cersei do something really bad
to Brienne of Tarth?
To Brienne. Oh yes.
Oh no.
Yes. Yes. Yep.
Bam.
No.
A winner.
He sees Cersei do something bad to Brienne.
Because Cersei knows that Brienne loves Jaime. She knows. She talked with her at the red, at the purple wedding.
Yep.
No.
Yep. She was the one who was saying to her, like, you love him, don't
yes.
you? Oh yeah. Oh yes.
Dang.
Love it. Love it.
I still
love
don't remember
it.
What
love
my
it.
Other three-eyed raven was.
Well, that's okay. That's why we get the listener feedback. Episode.
Yeah, it'll come back.
It
was something
back.
About Bran being useful.
All right,
for
so
once.
We're about an hour 10 into this bad
oh,
boy.
Oh, well, we better close
ish.
This out.
So, are you ready to close it out?
I sure am.
All right, let's go. And just for you, I've got something special.
So much for listening to this episode and for just listening to this totally random podcast that popped up in the final season, because we love Game of Thrones this much that we just can't contain our excitement, and we know that you can't either. So please make sure to send in your listener feedback and to make sure you subscribe so that you get this episode, future episodes sent straight to your device.
Right.
Please know that sharing is caring. This is the last season. There's only 3 episodes left. So really, like, now is the time. You know, head on over to get that Facebook live link or share the podcast link to your fellow Game of Thrones fans. It would mean the world to us.
And also make sure you go to maryandblake.com to check out, again, this podcast, but all the other podcasts that we do as well, including our show Outlander Cast for the show Outlander on Stars. We also do one for This Is Us on NBC called This Is Us 2. Mary has a podcast called Minute with Mary, all about business and marketing, because she's very special. No, she is. You're amazing.
Thanks.
You're my beautiful bride. I mean, how could you not be?
It's because I watched The Sound of Music. I grew up with educational programming. Learned my solfege. Do you know what solfege is?
No, not
do
at all.
Do, re, mi, fa, sol, la, ti, do.
Oh my God.
Got you.
You're such
except I just said that all in one tone.
You're
just like
such
a sin.
Dork.
Just sin.
Such a dork.
That's right.
If you also want to get in touch with us about this particular episode, about this podcast, please do go to maryandblake.com where you can write an email into us, or you can go and check out that voicemail app, like I said, called SpeakPipe. Just go to contact, hit the button that says voicemail, and you will be able to leave a voice message for us for the listener feedback, or find us out on our social media, all Mary and Blake, and whether it's YouTube or Facebook. Sorry, Mary's telling me a whole bunch of different stuff to do, and I'm trying to do 15 things at once. What do you got? You're eager about something.
I don't know. I was trying to remember my three-eyed raven thing. It had something to do when I was looking at the thrones. I was thinking about the throne. I know what it was.
Okay, what do you got?
Oh my gosh. It's that Bran is going to, like, do his time travel thing, and he's going to realize when he sees Cersei that Gendry is Cersei's baby.
Oh, okay. All right, I'll give you that one.
Because of that, he is the heir to the throne. That's what it is.
Ah, okay.
But it's Gendry.
But if Gendry ends up on the throne at the end, do you think that feels right too?
Not at all.
I feel like none of this feels right.
He'd say, I don't want to be here right now. I just want to go make some more dragon glass stuff and have sex with Arya.
All right, so check us out on social media. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, all Mary and Blake. And find us on YouTube as well.
All right. Well,
all right, everybody, thank you for joining us.
For now, my name's Mary Larson.
My name's Blake.
And the North remembers.